Ladies and gentlemen, this is your captain speaking. Welcome aboard Captain Fi, the Financial Independence Podcast. G'day. Welcome to an episode of Captain Fi, the Financial Independence Podcast, where I open the cockpit to some of the best and brightest in personal finance, as well as those who've reached or are on their way to financial independence. Today's flight is an international connection. We'll shortly be landing in London to chat with none other than our very own Aussie Firebug. The Aussie Firebug is a millennial trying to escape the 9-to-5 grind through financial independence. He invests in real estate, index funds, and superannuation. Originally from Melbourne, he's currently on a working holiday in London as he reaches near the end of his FIRE journey. The Aussie Firebug personally has been an incredibly positive influence on me. Through his blogs and podcasts, I first learned to navigate through the thick fog of personal finance and the investing world. The Aussie Firebug always had a keen interest in finance and wealth, even from a young age. He made the connection very early that most of his rich friends' parents didn't have normal jobs. They owned assets such as businesses and real estate. Armed with this, he started his investing journey and set about acquiring assets like most Aussies do in the world of property. He had a clear plan and strategy demonstrated by the three investment properties he was able to gain fairly quickly. Whilst researching more about investing, he discovered the term financial independence. Curious, this led him to read Robert Kiyosaki's Rich Dad, Poor Dad, where he learned that to reach FIRE, all you have to do is keep buying assets that make you money. Eventually, the snowball grows and you can live off the cash flow. He had discovered the concept of FIRE. After being addicted and devouring something like 20 finance books in rapid succession, he was hooked. Ramping up his savings rates, he began attending seminars and FIRE meetups, as well as following a number of highly influential online bloggers. He learnt about the power of index fund investing and began to diversify his property portfolio with index fund ETFs. His burning desire for FIRE led to the creation of the Aussie Firebug. Through his blog and podcast, he tracked his investing strategies, tools, decisions, and net worth as it has grown from zero right to this incredible $770,000 that it sits at today. Along the way, he's shared many of his personal stories and lessons, including his current experiences of working abroad, deep reflections on his path to FIRE, and the impact that this has had on his own relationships and own mental health at one stage. So, Aussie Firebug, welcome to the show.
Wow, what an intro. It's a pleasure to be here, mate.
When I go back through my personal investing journey, your blog was one of the very first I discovered. And I'm pretty sure you're the first Aussie FIRE blogger on the scene around 2015, is that right?
Yeah, I don't 100% know if that's right, but I'm pretty sure I haven't seen an earlier one, so I'm claiming it that I was the first one. There was a lot of blogs that did financial independence and a lot of pages, but retiring in your 30s, the actual early retirement, financial independence, early retirement was not in Australia at that point, I believe. Unless someone corrects me, I'm claiming that I was the first one.
Oh, he's the OG of FIRE.
In Australia.
Look, I became obsessed with your site at one stage, sort of consuming all of your articles, listening to all of your podcasts repeatedly. It really drove the family and the missus nuts. I remember one Christmas, I think I just started investing in VTS. So I had your YouTube channel up streaming in the living room because I was getting tips on, you know, filling out that annoying W-8 Ben form, and literally I got banned from the remote and they're like, no more Firebug, just relax, it's Christmas.
Yeah, so somehow I don't think a video about the W-8 Ben E form would have gone down that well. I think it's a boring enough topic even amongst the fire community, so it's not really going to do well in the living room, I'd think.
One of your first podcasts was with the Mad Fiantist, and I read all of his stuff, and I read all of his blog articles and listened to his podcasts, and I actually discovered that through his podcasts, one of the first interviewers he had was actually, Mr. Money Moustache himself. And those two really highly influential and almost celebrities in the fire community. And I learned so much from them. So I feel like having you on the Captain Fire show now, it's a rite of passage.
Well, I'm glad to be here, mate. And hopefully I can continue the theme of having a prominent blogger or podcaster on as your first one.
So first up, mate, can you tell us a little bit more about yourself? So clearly you have a bit of a travel bug, but what other hobbies or things do you do for fun?
Yeah, so definitely could almost rename the website the travel bug after the last 12 months. So I'm just a fairly normal guy from country Victoria. I play football. I'm in a footy. I'm into keeping fit. I'm a bit overly obsessed with finances, but other than that, I had a pretty normal upbringing through a middle class family. I went to the local Catholic school in the town that I'm from, and me and the missus have been on this worldwide trip in the last 12 months. It was a big bucket list item that we wanted to tick off. Before that, we did the normal things that normal people do. We went to school. We both went to uni. I started full-time work when I was 22, worked all the way up till 29. Two jobs between those two time periods, but it was the same sort of career. And then, when I was 29 last year, we decided to uproot and move to London to see a bit of Europe and to see a bit of the UK. So that's where we are now.
Yeah, I think it's really clever the way you've done this.
Yeah, I think it's worked out pretty well. Like, we spoke a bit before we started recording, but it just worked out that our journey to fire wasn't put completely on hold, even though I'd sort of factored that in. Like, we definitely took a risk doing this last year, or quitting our jobs last year, because we were on the road to fire and I could see the finish line. Like, last year I'm like, if I just stay in this job and Mrs. Firebug stays in her job, we can get this done in the next couple of years. Like, it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when for us. But life's about living, and that's always the philosophy that I've had. Or maybe not always. At the start, I was a bit too extreme, but I think the journey towards fire should be just as enjoyable as your retirement life after you reach financial independence should be. It should be about building the lifestyle that you want in retirement. And even the word retirement's sort of a funny word, because it means different things to different people. It's probably not even, it doesn't really describe it how most people see it in the fire world anyway. So I'm not sure, like, the whole, whoever created the term fire, but that's neither here nor there. But the journey towards fire is more important, or the life that you're living, I think, is very important, and you shouldn't have to sacrifice a whole bunch of things, and you shouldn't have to be living a life that you don't want to live just to get to this magical number. So in saying that, and trying to practice what I preach, we had the bucket list item of traveling the world, and even though it could have delayed our fire date, I think it definitely delayed our fire date, but it worked out that I managed to get a pretty good job over here in London, and the markets are doing pretty well. So we're still on the journey towards fire. So it's just a little road bump, financially speaking, but it's one of the best things I've ever done, and I sort of wish I did it earlier.
That's so important, isn't it? You need to have a sustainable approach to FIRE. I think most people on the path to FIRE have definitely gone a bit extreme at the start and really wanted to get that savings rate up and being quite frugal.
I think it's natural. That's like, it happened to me. It happened to Brandon, the mad scientist. I don't know about Mr. Money Moustache, but I'm sure. Do you know what? Maybe it didn't happen to him, because it's funny. Once you discover the term FIRE, for me, a light bulb went off in my brain, and I was trying to do everything in my power to get there as soon as possible. That can be unhealthy at times, and that definitely was for me in the first couple of years. And I can't even begin to describe it. There's someone listening out there that's listening to this podcast that maybe is in the first couple of years of FIRE, and they're not maybe seeing the gains that they'd hoped they'd seen, and it's not happening quick enough for them. Just give it time and let it compound after a few years, because it's absolutely insane. The power of compound interest is really insane, and the snowball will start rolling down that hill, and before you know it, it will start generating that passive income, that little trickle of passive income, and that will turn into a stream. And then before you know it, it turns into a raging torrent, which is almost the point where we're at now. Like we're on the home stretch and we can see the finish line. And, we just got a whole bunch of dividends the other month. And I remember, opening the email, the notification that dividends were rolling in. And I thought, it's almost too easy at this point. Now, I know the markets have been doing well the last couple of years, but you really do reach a critical mass. It gets to a point where all your assets you have so many assets that they're generating enough money that you almost don't even have to add to the snowball, and you could just chill and like live your life and, switch on the reinvestment dividend plan, and you would eventually coast to FIRE, which is, some people talk about coast FIRE, but it's really powerful, and time and delayed gratification, it's really powerful shit. Hope I'm allowed to say that.
Yeah, I think you're nailing the concept of FIRE, and it's pretty inspirational. A lot of the stuff that you are talking about comes down to really mindset and focus. And I think the whole FIRE movement can be summarized by saying you're putting the needs of tomorrow ahead of the wants of today.
For sure. 100%. And one last thing, I keep cutting in, but you've just talking about this stuff is, it gets me psyched up. But someone said, I think it was Ted Richards that I had a podcast with, and it's so true. Invest in is so much more about the mental side than it is about the numbers or the strategy. Strategy is important and the numbers are important, but it really is more to do with psychology, investing, or good investing, being able to stick to the plan through thick and thin and understanding what you're actually doing versus, spending 4 hours online in a forum debating 3 basis points or something like that. It's really a lot more to do with your mindset and the psychology of how you approach the investments and what you're going to do when there is a downturn in the market.
That's such a mature way to think of this problem. So Aussie Firebug, mate, how did you get so good with money? Was there any thing with your upbringing that helped your mindset, or sort of any defining moment for you when you realized you needed to start investing to get ahead?
I'd probably attribute it a lot of my frugality, if you will, to my old man. So he's a wog, he's a tight ass Italian, and growing up, he taught me the value of the dollar. He was always, always hard on me about buying anything, like absolutely anything. So I had a part-time job when I was 14 and 10 months old, which was like 2 months after the the age limit to get a job in Australia. So I was like in a job straight away, earning money as nearly as soon as I could. And whenever I'd spend my money on anything, doesn't matter what it was, how good it was, he'd sort of like, you know, judge me on it, like, oh, like, what are you doing spending your money on that crap, and ripped off and stuff like that. So I always was annoyed and I was always like, what's his deal? You know, I can't spend money on bloody anything. And he's not, it's not that he wasn't happy, but it was a bit of a joke, but I guess it was a bit of a lesson secretly as well that, you know, just watch what you spend your money on. And he did tell me, like, you know, a fool and his money are easily parted. And that sort of, that quote stuck with me as well. And yeah, so my parents, definitely the biggest influence on me, but particularly my dad, and just general money habits, like learning how to cooking your own meals, saving money, stuff like that. Not that I had to do that when I was living at home, but just those values of those lessons in life to be able to know how to cook, even when at home, you know, has served me well throughout my life. And then to the second point about, like, was there a catalyst or was there one big moment for financial independence? I think you mentioned that definitely was when I started full-time work. Basically, I started full-time work and, like, I finished uni, I got a job, you know, I'm going down the normal path that everyone aspires to go down, and you know, 21st century middle-class Australia, like, that's the plan or the set of things that you're really meant to do. If you go to uni, you know, study hard, get a degree, go get a job, work full time for 40 years, retire happily, whatever. Standard plan for most Aussies. So I started my full time job, and I remember it to this day. I remember it and will never forget how I just looked at full-time work differently after that week, that first 2 weeks, because I thought, man, I'm spending so much of my life at this place. And the work wasn't bad. Like, I quite enjoyed it, but I'll never forget remembering or how it felt almost being forced to go there. I wasn't forced to, because I could have quit, but I was just like, well, I'm in a job now. Like, this is my life. This is my new life. So I started going to work and I'm like, yeah, this is a lot of my life out of the week, like 5 days with a commute and everything, that I'm never gonna get back. But I just pushed through, and, like, I guess most people, you just get used to it and it just becomes the norm after a while. And then fast forward like a year or something, and I bought an investment property because, again, my parents were, they'd done well with real estate, and they wanted me to be a smart person, which, you know, there's two major religions in Australia, like everyone knows, Christianity and real estate investing. So they wanted me to buy a property, and I did, because that was the common consensus amongst all my friends and family, that smart people that want to do well in life buy property and they get ahead through property. That's what you always hear.
Yes. Yep. So it's like there's like this philosophy that property can never go down in Australia.
Exactly. So yeah, I wanted to be one of those smart people and those someone to get ahead. And I bought my first investment property in 2013. I think 2012. I think I signed it on I built. So I got the first home buyer's grant. Anyway, I think it was around about 2012. And then it took me about a year later to actually start, like, researching about how to invest in property, because my parents sort of walked me through, like, I got a lot of help off them and, like, mentoring off them, because they'd been there and done it, about what to look for, you know, where are the jobs coming from? Is it close to public transport? Is there schools? And, you know, they've been through it before. So I could invest in confidence by drawing from their experience. So that gave me confidence. And I picked up a book about a year later, because I was like, I've just spent all this money and I've got all this debt to my name. Like, what am I actually doing? What's the plan? I don't have a plan I just did this because a whole bunch of people told me it was a good thing to do. I don't actually know if it was really a good thing to do, so I'm hoping it was. And I picked up a book, Rich Dad Poor Dad, because apparently that was a kick-ass financial book and, you know, you had to read this book. So I read that book and that's where I come across financial independence. And that, you know, just reading that simple sentence of assets generate money. If you have enough assets that generate enough money, you never have to work a day in your life again. And that really struck a chord with me. And I was like, whoa. Like I was like, you know, Neo waking up from the Matrix. I was like, oh my God, this is it. Like this is something, because I've always been a saver, but what I was saving for was never there. Like the goal of the end goal of saving was never really there for me. And that right there was like, that is what I want to do. I want to build up enough assets so I have the flexibility to only do work that I enjoy. And yeah, that's where like financial independence, I burned through his book and then I went through the property investing route and I read Stephen McKnight's Zero to 130 Properties in 3.5 Years. It's very clickbait, the title of that book, but it's actually a really, really solid property investment property book. Highly recommend. And then I come across Mr. Money Moustache, like, I don't know, like some time in 2013, I stumbled across his site. And that is just where, like, that was just financial independence on steroids. Like anyone who has read that blog knows what I'm talking about. It's just like, it's a very, you know, Pete at Mr. Money Moustache, he writes very well, like for starters, and he's actually achieved, excuse me, what he's writing about. He's not just saying that this can work in theory, which is like gives him a lot of credibility. And everything he writes about makes sense. Not just, he doesn't just write in a way that could be interpreted to make sense. Like the numbers are there, like the strategies are there. So when I read all those, I was just completely hooked and, you know, I was just consuming everything early retirement related in the FIRE sphere that I could get my hands on. And that was basically when, you know, I formulated a goal in my brain that I was going to reach this goal and I was going to get there as quickly as possible, which probably wasn't the best thing to do. But yeah, that's the story.
I can relate to so many things that you've just said. I remember when I discovered FIRE, I too went down the reading route and, you know, I read all of your stuff and you put me onto Mr. Money Moustache and the Mad Scientist and I got obsessed. I was reading all of your stuff, all of the Mad Scientist stuff and all of Mr. Money Moustache's stuff. So be honest here, did you become obsessed with Mr. Money Moustache as well?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Like I burned through that blog, you know, in a few weeks, maybe a month or something. Like it was an unhealthy obsession. Like I was reading 7 or 8 articles every day at work. Like when I got home, I was listening to all Mad Scientist podcasts. Like I was on a bender. That first maybe year of discovering FIRE, I couldn't get enough of it. It was just consuming financial related stuff at an unhealthy rate.
That's so good to that. Well, it's good to hear because it makes me feel better because I was doing the same. Like I was at work. I was sometimes we have really, really long sectors with, you know, up to 16-hour flights. And we have the ability to get internet on the aircraft. So we can, I could actually turn the satellite Wi-Fi on and actually be reading on my phone or my iPad and, you know, reading these Mr. Money Moustache blogs. And even recently I've gone so far as I have these headphones, these little Bose headphones. They actually can fit under my headset in the aircraft. So now I can actually listen to the Aussie Firebug podcast whilst we're cruising along at 30,000 feet. Do you have a FIRE number you're working towards?
Yeah, this like I actually haven't posted a lot about this, and I was thinking about this the other month that I probably should have like a countdown to a goal that I'm setting, or else it will just sort of go on forever. I think like based on our expenses in Australia, I think I'll be aiming for the cool 1 million in investments.
The cool mil.
Yeah, I think like that will be, you know, obviously a major milestone. But I don't – like we plan to have kids, and I'm quite ready to have kids like now, to be honest with you. But I'm well aware that, you know, there's parts of your life that you can't do anymore once you have kids. part of your life is over when you have kids, and I understand that. So I'm getting all the traveling and everything I want to do out of the way this year. But I'm like, you know, a few of my friends started having kids, and I'm not getting any younger, so I'm well and truly ready to have kids. But we need to do a few things. Actually, we need to get married first, and then details,
semantics.
yeah, exactly. Do all that stuff, but that's going to change our spendings. I don't know how much. Like, there's just a few things. Yep. It's hard to say. Like, there's a goal, but I think, like, even now, like I spoke a little bit about it before, but you reach critical mass. The portfolio reaches critical mass at some point where it literally just takes care of itself. Like it's, and again, I'll say, like, I know people listening, the markets are doing well. It's not a bear market. I get it. But it really, you get to a point where it just, as long as you're sticking to the basic strategy that you're implementing, and you know, a lot of people in the FIRE communities do the ETF index portfolio funds. It's a really simple strategy. Keep your expenses relatively low. I reckon the cool 1 mil will be a great starting point, and we'll go from there. But I've got no doubt that at that point, even almost at this point, at, you know, 770 odd thousand that we're at now, the options and flexibility that it's already presenting themselves now. Like I feel like I'm in the option to retire early even now, even though it, like, maybe mathematically is not going to work exactly. It's such a relieving feeling, and like you, I quite enjoy my job, but I think, like, for me personally, and like, this is such a you know, everyone in the FIRE community has a different opinion about the retire early part, like the financial independence part. Financial independence part's pretty defined. Everyone knows what that means. It's about having enough assets that are generating a passive income to cover your living expenses. But the retire early bit is so subjective to so many people. But for me personally, it's about retiring from the rat race and retiring from doing something you don't necessarily love doing and you do just to make money, and then to go into the next phase of your life and to start your career in doing exactly what you want to do. And more often than not, that will be in a career that actually flips a buck, you know, that makes money. And more often than not, from what I've read, for people that have actually become financially independent, they ended up making more money in their passion field than they ever did in the field that they didn't really enjoy. So I almost feel like I'm already there. I'm already reaping some of the benefits of the retire early part of FIRE. That was a waffly answer to your question, but I think the cool mil, 1 million is what we'll be aiming for, and then I'll reassess after that.
I think one of my first articles was talking about, well, what is the RE? Is it retire early?
It's a difference. I think there is a difference between financial independence and FIRE, the retire early part. And for me, my interpretation of the difference is there's people that reach financial independence. There's plenty of people in the world that reach financial independence. But what they don't do, and what a lot of people traditionally have done, is they don't take that next step and do the retire early. Whatever that means to you, it's different for everyone, but they don't transition from a career that was about trading their time for money into a passion project or into a career about doing work that they love doing. they just stay the course and just get richer for I don't know what reason. Does that make sense? Like, so that, like, I feel like that's a real key difference between, like, I always read online people, I'm not interested in retire early. I just want to be financially independent. Like, what does that even mean? What there has to be, you need to, financial independence, like, it was never about financial independence. It was never about the money for me. It's about what that money could do for my life. And for me, yeah, exactly. It's the retire early part for me is the whole purpose of amassing that many assets, like amassing assets just for the hell of accumulating wealth doesn't really do anything for me. It's like, what do I actually want to do with my life once I've got that wealth behind me? Because you can have that wealth and do nothing with it, which is technically still financially independent. But I feel like the more important part is what you do with that wealth, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, 100% agree with you there. Like, personally, I'm not interested in just amassing wealth so that I can, you know, instead of driving a Subaru, I can now drive a Mercedes and pay more tax. Yeah, for me, it's always been about, I guess, buying back my time. Like, I know so many people, there's this sort of wage trap. A lot of guys can go and get jobs based out of, you know, flying for airlines in Asia or the Middle East, and they can come with really high paychecks. They get trapped in this lifestyle inflation cycle, and, you know, they'll be away from home so often so that, you know, the kids can go to the private school, the wife can go to the yacht club, they've got luxury cars in the driveway, and all of a sudden now they're trapped into that high income earning cycle where they have to keep doing it and working away from home so much just to keep that going. And yeah, for me, I guess that was something I was never really interested in.
I'm hearing you loud and clear there. Absolutely.
Yeah. So the wedding, I have a really interesting opinion on weddings now. they're pretty expensive, right? Like
they can be. It's like,
yes, they can be. That's true. So it's a fact that a lot of people around our age are getting married, right? Like, yes. I've seen on your spending history, like, you talk about all the travel that you've done to attend weddings,
buying suits.
I feel your pain. I've just recently dropped $1,000 on a suit for a wedding, but, you know, I absolutely love my mate, and it's going to be worth it to be there supporting him. But I read that on average, Aussies spend something like $60,000 on a wedding.
That's diabolical. That is ludicrous.
So $60,000, if you invest that, and actually I sat down with my missus and she was not impressed as we did the maths on a napkin, but we worked out that if you didn't spend that $60,000 on a wedding, if you actually invested that in ultra low cost diversified index fund ETFs, you know, like your split that you invest in, you know, VTS, VAS, and VEU, every year you could take a 2-week fully paid vacation. So my question was, hey, do you want this $60,000 wedding, or every year to celebrate your anniversary, do you want to go away for a 2-week fully paid vacation? And it's really, when you start comparing in terms of what you could have, it's a really interesting way of thinking about money.
Absolutely. And the thing is, there's going to be some people out there that are listening that do value that $60,000 wedding, and that's perfectly fine. Like, if you're, if that's something that means a hell of a lot to you, then do it. There's no rules. There's no right answer for everyone when it comes to FIRE. But like you said, I think that if people looked at it a different way, and if you actually really broke down, what does a wedding mean to you? Do you actually want to do a big wedding, or does your mum want to do the big wedding? Or are you just doing a big wedding because your sister did the big wedding? Like, if you start asking those basic, simple questions, you might find out that actually, I'm not doing this for, we're not doing this for us. We're doing this because we thought that's the thing that you have to do to get married. And instead we could, you know, tone it down a lot. And like you said, maybe go on a paid vacation, 2 week vacation every year instead.
Yeah. Well, I tell you what, if you need a lift back from London, jump on board. As soon as we get into international waters, I'm pretty sure that the captain can pronounce like you man and wife. So, you know, that could be a low cost opportunity.
Mate, I was ready to go to the local chapel in Spain, where I'll pop the question. But you know, I think we will be having a wedding when we get back to Australia. I think it's going to be just small, like family only, but we'll see. Yeah. We'll see how it goes.
Oh, fantastic.
It'll be on the blog.
I look forward to reading about it, man. You and Mrs. Firebug, you are killing it with investing. Can you tell us a little bit about your current investing strategy?
Yeah, sure. So my investing strategy at the very beginning, it wasn't even a strategy. It was just a savings account. Like that's common amongst most people. You just earn interest on your savings account and you're like, wow, that's cool. I didn't do anything and my bank account paid me a little bit of money. That's really awesome. And then I started, like I said earlier, I started full-time work and I wanted to be clever. I wanted to set myself up for the future. So I bought an investment property. And then I discovered financial independence and I was like, okay, now I've actually got a goal. So now this is real and like I'm taking this shit really seriously and I'm going to write down the plan of attack that is going to enable me to reach financial independence. And the original plan went something like this. It was if I could get 10 investment properties and then hold them for 10 or 7 to 10 years, because everyone knows that old saying that properties double in price every 7 to 10 years, which we of course know is not true, but that's the old saying. If I had 10 properties, I wait 7 to 10 years, they double in price, I could sell half of them, and then I would have 5 properties that are fully paid off and I could live off the rent. So that was the original plan. And it was actually, I was well on my way. I had 3 properties like within, I think, 3 years of like working full time because the lending conditions were completely different back then and the banks were just throwing money at everyone. So it was crazy that I was even able to get 3 different loans. I definitely wouldn't have been able to do that in this lending environment. But I hit a wall because the banks were like, you know, you're borrowing too much money. There's a... there was the General Commission in the banking sector and like APRA pulled back all the lending regulatory legislation. It's technical. Basically, the government was like, hold the phone on all these loans. There's a potential bubble. We need to really like rein this stuff in. And they did because I went to apply. Like I asked about getting my 4th loan. And they're like, hell no, you're not getting, because at that stage, it was just me. Like it was just me on a single income having 3 loans. So I was like, damn, okay. So this puts a spanner in the works. And like everything was working at that stage with the properties because a common strategy was like you buy a property, you do your research, you buy, you hope that it goes up, you pull out equity, you use that equity to then fund your next purchase and you keep hopping along like that. It's actually a really risky strategy. When I think about it, like looking back in hindsight now, but it can work. And a lot of people, it has worked out for a lot of people, but on the flip side, people have been burnt that way as well. But anyway, I got denied for my like 4th loan application. And it was at this point after reading Mr. Money Moustache for a solid, I reckon I was reading his stuff for like over a year before I started investing in ETFs or even thinking about investing in the share market. Yeah. That's how long I was researching it for, maybe even like 2 years or something. Because I come across him in, it was over 2 years. I come across him in like 2013 and we started investing in shares in 2016. So like 2 and a bit years, maybe even 3. So that's how long I was pondering about the stock market. And at that stage, I was still very much real estate. But when I hit the wall, I started looking at the stock market a lot more seriously. And I went back to a few articles that he had written about the stock market. And I read a lot of books about the stock market. And basically, I come to the conclusion, and everyone in the FIRE space was doing it, all the international FIRE bloggers were using this strategy called passive style index investing through this vehicle called an ETF, which is an exchange traded fund.
This podcast is brought to you by the best portfolio tracking tool for Aussie investors. ShareSite makes it incredibly simple to track your portfolio with automatic updates of share purchases and dividends, easy-to-read graphs, and comprehensive tax and performance reporting, all wrapped up in an easy-to-use cloud-based system. For users with fewer than 10 holdings, it is completely free, and I even used the free version for years. Head over to captainfire.com/ShareSite-review to see if ShareSite is for you. Captain Fire listeners can score themselves 4 months of ShareSite premium for free by using the bonus sign-up code in the article. If you do ever decide to hold more than 10 stocks, be sure to use this code to get your first 4 months for free. Even if you do only plan to use the free version, using the code means if you ever do upgrade, you will still get your 4 months for free. Ditch the Excel spreadsheet and complete your tax with a click of a button by signing up today. That's captainfire.com/ShareSite-review for your 4 free months.
And I won't go into how they work and everything, but in a nutshell, just summarizing briefly, it's you buy this one product that's traded on the ASX, the Australian Stock Exchange or Securities Exchange, and you get exposure to a whole bunch of different companies, different sectors, but by just purchasing this one product. So with these ETFs, I was able to build a portfolio through three ETFs that gave me access and instant diversification across the entire Australian stock market, or the top 300 biggest companies that were traded on the stock market in Australia. The top, I think, 1,500 companies traded in America, and then the top, I think it's like over 4,000 companies in the rest of the world. So you're talking, you know, Exxon, Apple, Commonwealth Bank, like all the biggest companies in the world. You can get a tiny slice of their ownership through a product like an ETF. And it's a bit hard to explain the whole like investment strategy, but we decided to go with a stock market strategy, a passive income diversified ETF strategy since 2016. And we basically said we'll run with it for like a year and see how we go. And we can always go back to real estate. And it was around about that point that we joined Financial Forces. So Mrs. Firebug and myself, we joined bank accounts and we started investing together. And ever since we invested in ETFs, we haven't looked back. And basically, the strategy has chopped and changed a lot throughout the years, but we're at a point now where the end goal for our portfolio is we want it to be 100% in shares, and we want to cover our living expenses from the dividends that those shares generate. And that's it in a nutshell. We want the dividends to come in 4 times or 2 times a year, whatever the fund pays. And we use those dividends to pay our expenses for our life. And that's it. And then there's a whole theory behind how this stuff works. And like I said, I won't go into it in detail in this answer, but the portfolio is theoretically going to outgrow or grow with inflation. So the dividends every single year will be a little bit more and a little bit more, but they'll keep up with inflation, hopefully. In reality, or historically speaking, they'll probably outpace inflation. And that's it. We'll live off dividends in the end, and we're slowly transitioning. We've got 2 properties left to sell and to put that money into a share portfolio. And that's the plan.
It's a remarkably simple strategy, the snowball effect of ETFs. And I remember when I was reading your blog and was learning more about it online, and I'll have your investing strategy in the show notes for anyone.
Yeah, that'd probably be good. Save me from waffling on trying to explain the whole strategy. But yeah, go read the post.
I'm interested to hear, though, would you, knowing what you know now, would you have still gone into property at the start and used leverage, or would you have gone straight to a passive ETF style?
That's a good question. Hindsight is 2020. So knowing what I know now, like the first house that we sold, so we've sold one of the three investment properties that I originally bought. We've got two to sell still. Hopefully the other one will be sold very soon. But knowing what I know, like we made, I think the return on the first investment property, the annualized return was like 33% or something ridiculous like that. And a major reason, like I can't sit here and say that I'm some, you know, master property investor. A major reason that that happened was because Melbourne boomed. Like the whole time that I had that property, it just went up and up and up all the way until I sold. I'd started to dip a little bit when I sold, like 9 months before I sold, it started to go down. But like that's just luck. There was nothing really that I foreseen that happening. And the other thing was that interest rates were going down the whole time. So when I look back, it's sort of like it's just such a fortunate time. And it's nothing to do with my skill that I got into property during the early, you know, 2010s, where interest rates were dropping and property was going up. It was just how it played out. But I still like property as an investment class. Like one thing that's funny in the FIRE crowd, especially, people are so tribal with their investment classes. It's like you have to be property, or you have to be shares, or you have to be, you know, pro bonds, or you have to be pro gold, whatever. It at the end of the day, if the asset is going to be generating some sort of income, because that's really, to me, that's sort of a it must generate an income. That's why I'm like, I'm not personally a big fan of gold, because it doesn't do that. And I'm sure there's people out there listening that could write a whole thesis on why gold is a good investment. And that's cool. But like I said at the start, investing to me is a lot more psychological. And I understand at this point how the stock market works and why the strategy that I'm implementing, this passive ETF index fund style strategy, is going to get us to financial independence. And I think that's a major part that some people, they're not willing to put in the effort to research it themselves. I couldn't even begin to describe some of the emails that I get that are like, hey, like I'm 40 years old, two kids, what ETF should I buy? Something like that. Like first of all, I can't give out financial advice. Like, don't ask me those sort of questions. And secondly, that's an impossible question for anyone to answer, because there's just not enough information in there. Like, you need to be comfortable with your strategy. That's such an important part of financial independence, or using the stock market to reach financial independence. Because if you just read a blog, and you could read my blog, you could read Mr. Money Moustaches, you could read anyone, or you watch a video on YouTube, and you get what they're saying and it sounds good, but you don't really 100% know exactly how it works, and like you're not fully around the whole strategy fully, then that's a recipe for disaster. Because when shit hits the fan, and it will, there will be a crash. Hasn't happened for a long time, but there will be a crash. It's going to be those sort of people that read one or two articles and then started putting thousands of dollars into a strategy just because they heard it off old mate. They're the ones that are going to be affected negatively, or they're the ones that are going to start believing all the shitty articles that's going to get published when the next stock market crashes. And the articles that, you know, talk about the end of capitalism as we know it, the end of the stock market, yada, 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 that stuff, the shit that gets posted every single time. Like, you know, you mentioned off air, Pat the Shuffler released a great post the other day about like how the world was ending in 2012, and then in 2013 it was going to crash, 14, 15, 16, and so on and so on. So my point is that whichever, like, it doesn't matter if you invest in property, if you invest in shares, if you invest in gold, whatever, just make sure that you know what you're doing, and your strategy is something that you know inside and out, and then just stick with it. You can change strategies. Like I've changed strategies, but there needs to be a good reason, and there needs to be like a thinking process behind that strategy. Like I said, I literally researched the stock market and ETFs for over a year before I even dipped my toes in. And even then I was nervous. Even then when I put $5,000 in, like my heart rate went up a little bit. I was like, oh my God, am I making a mistake? Like, am I fucking this up? Like I need assistance. But you learn to deal with those nerves, and like you understand it the longer you do it. But I just think it's an important thing to not just read one article or read one book, to really crystallize your own strategies to suit your own needs, because they're different for everyone.
Yeah, you need to immerse yourself, I think, and really going back to what we said, that burning desire to learn and know more. I think that's the first step to reaching FIRE, is that burning desire. And, you know, you can look at some of the world's best investors, you know, Warren Buffett, the Oracle of Omaha. He says, never invest in anything that you don't understand.
Exactly. Yeah.
The first stock I ever bought was AFIC. Oh, it was actually, it was like a bit of a comedy, the process of me buying this stock. And I didn't actually know what AFIC was. I just read that, okay, there's this thing, it's called AFIC, it's AFI on the stock exchange, and it's really good and you should buy it. I actually thought it was a concreting company, because I thought that's what foundation investment company meant. Like, oh, they're obviously like a building conglomerate or something. And I feel so stupid looking back, and a lot of research led me down the ETF path. And yeah, I think you've hit the nail on the head. It's super important that you do your own research and make sure that your investing strategy is appropriate to your personal circumstance.
Absolutely. And just because, like, just one last point, it's not about total returns. And that this is, you know, touches on the whole investing's more mental. Some people are just more comfortable investing in property. And like some people out there that, you know, I read a whole bunch of forums, I read, you know, Facebook groups and everything. Some people need to understand this. There are people out there that just are going to be more comfortable investing in different asset classes. Like, it is not ETF passive investing is a really, really great choice for a heap of people. And I wish more people would be take the time and get educated, learn about the share market. But the fact of the matter is, there's going to be a large percentage that don't do that, but are going to trust bricks and mortar. And do you know what? That's fine. It's not an issue. It isn't a pissing contest between the asset classes. They're all got their merits in some way, shape, or form. But for me personally, like me and Mrs. Firebug, we have gone down the passive ETF route, and that works for us. But what works for us might not work for you.
I don't think I could have summarized that any better. I remember reading Graham's The Intelligent Investor, and he talks about an enterprising investor versus a defensive investor.
Yes, yep.
I thought, yes, I'm definitely an enterprising investor. I'm an extrovert, and I'm going to put all this effort and time into my investments, and we're going to beat the market. But really, I actually discovered I'm actually more of a defensive or passive investor. And you know what? That's fine. Everyone's different.
Yes. Agreed.
Yeah. When we're talking about investing, do you invest in your and Miss Firebug's own name, or do you use any company or trust structures to hold those ETFs and properties?
Yeah, so we invest through a trust. And it's funny that you mentioned before, like, that you thought you had to put in a whole bunch of effort and do it a little bit differently to get ahead, because when I set up the trust, that's how I was thinking. I actually set up a trust. A major reason for me doing our investments through the trust was reading Steve McKnight's book, his property investing book, and he was really big on trusts. And there was a whole chapter to do with investing through a trust. And he even recommended a book called Trust Magic. And I read that book, and I had the exact same thinking as yourself, but I was in the property investing stage in my investing career, and I thought, like, if I do everything like everyone else, if I follow everyone else, I'm going to end up like everyone else. I need to do something different. I need to like put in the extra effort to get the better result. I definitely had that mindset, and it has taken me a while to understand that passive investing is different. Like usually a lot of things in life, if you put the effort in, you're going to get the result out. But the stock market is slightly different in that regards. The more effort you actually put in, odds are the worse result you're going to get, funny enough. But the trust was, in hindsight, if I could go back to the start, I would have never bothered with it, because it just complicates things a lot, and it's not necessary to fire. Having said that, it has actually turned out to be super beneficial for us and our travels. And the reason being, I am a resident for tax purposes in the UK right now. Now, if there's any accountants listening, you'll know straight away where I'm going with this. If you're a resident of another country, you pay extra on all the dividends that your assets are generating in your name back in that country. So like all my property, like the rent and the dividends and everything would be like getting smashed if I was, I'd be paying a lot more tax, put it that way. Because I hold them in a trust, my parents actually control all our assets at the moment. So if mum and dad are listening, please don't go on any crazy holidays using our shares, please. Like, so I handed the keys to mum and dad when we left, and like I changed my residency status. And a few people have actually written into me, and I got a massive post about Australia to London and like all the tips and tricks if you're going to make the move, and I really need to get it out. But basically the trust has been a lifesaver for us this last year, and it will continue being this next year. And then when we get back to Australia, because our trust is set up with a corporate trustee, I'm going to become the director of that corporate trustee when we get back, and it will continue business as usual. And also the extra advantage is that you can divert the income of the assets generated or the income generated from the assets within the trust. And that's been super beneficial for us being overseas at the moment as well. But that's a whole nother story. And like, not everyone is going to move to London for 2 years. So
yeah,
I wouldn't have done it. Like if I could go back in time, I just would have done it in my own name. It's just a lot easier to do. And there was a whole bunch of headaches with especially getting home loans, having a trust. It was just a pain in the ass. It's not necessary. I'll just say that. It's not necessary.
Okay, I think that's great advice. For anyone who wants to go into a little bit more detail, the book that the Aussie Fiber was talking about was Trust Magic by Dale Gatherum Goss. It's a great book. I haven't read it cover to cover. I have flicked through it. There are some things that might have changed. I think he originally published it, almost 20 years ago now. But it's full of awesome gouge, and I'll whack that in the show notes.
Yeah, that is a good book. That's the best book. And you read it and you think, oh my God, trusts are the bomb. I need to do a trust. But in reality, going through it and everything, like, it's just not necessary. Like, this isn't advice, but I think that it's more of a headache than it's worth, to be honest, even though, yes, you can save money and it is flexible and you have asset protection. I personally wouldn't have bothered doing it at the start.
Yeah, again, sometimes the simple solution is all it takes.
Absolutely, that's it. Keep it simple.
Speaking of structuring an account, I know you've just released a monster podcast on superannuation, which is very similar to the American 401k or the Roth IRA. I concessionally contribute right to my cap, and I have been for some time. So my super actually makes up a huge portion of my net worth. What are your top tips regarding super, and do you max out your contributions at all, or how do you use superannuation?
No, I don't max out my contributions. And at the moment, I'm not contributing anything because I'm not working in Australia. So yeah, that podcast was, yeah, it was a beast, and an hour and a half. It was huge. And to be honest, we could have probably spoke for another hour and a half just because Super is, it's a bit complex and there's a lot of areas around it, a lot of legislation written about it. So that was probably just scratching the surface, to be honest. My thoughts on Super, I guess, like, this is such it's a bit of a controversial topic amongst the FIRE community because it is such a good vehicle to use. It's the most tax efficient vehicle for majority of Australians, but people that are looking to FIRE, and again, it's so circumstantial. So this is really, like, you're not going to get a perfect answer here, but if you're going to retire early, like in your 30s, like I'm planning to do, me and Mrs. Firebug, and you know that you're not going to be living off a lot of money, you know, you're going to keep your expenses low, that's the true FIRE way, unless you're doing like fat FIRE, then it's actually possible, and we talked about it in the show, to pay more in tax by having your investments in Super than it would have otherwise been having your portfolio outside of Super. And the reason for that is the flat 15% tax rate within Super versus if you are outside Super, and if you're, let's say you got your house paid off and you can live off, I don't know, like $38,000 a year or 37, whatever it is. Basically, if there's two people in the relationship and you both earn through dividends, the minimum tax-free threshold amount, which is like $18,500 Australian dollars or something like that. So if you're getting those dividends under the tax-free threshold, then you're paying less tax outside Super than you would be if you had that money inside Super. So that's a really like strange and odd circumstances, but in the FIRE community, it might not be that uncommon. So, like, it's really hard to know what's the best answer. I'd say for majority, like 99.9% of Australians should probably max out their Super every single year. But if you're looking to FIRE, you got to crunch the numbers. And my other sort of qualm with Super is just the chopping and changing of the rules. I personally, again, all circumstantial, I personally just feel more comfortable building up the snowball outside Super and reaching financial independence so we can retire early outside Super. And then once I reach, if I make it, that's a bit morbid, but if I make it to the preservation age, then it's just going to be cherry on top and it's going to be a bonus. And if I'm earning money up to the preservation age, yes, I'm going to be salary sacrificing for sure. But at the moment, it's Super's not heavily in our FIRE plans.
Yeah, interesting, man. I think a really, really good response. And I did read one of your articles where you talked about, you know, okay, so worst case, without some of those tax savings, even if it took you an extra 6 months or year to FIRE, that security of investing outside was worth it for your peace of mind.
Yeah, that's my take on it. And that's not to say, like, there's plenty of people and there's plenty of FIRE bloggers that will say, you know, that they're maxing out the cap every year and they're building up their snowball inside Super. And that's awesome. Like, that's, you know, I think that's great. That it's definitely, it's really like we're splitting hairs at this point. Whenever FIRE people, you know, have a debate amongst investment products and, you know, a few basis points or whatever, this is so far at the end of the journey sort of stuff. Like, the big ticket items, anyone that's listening that wants to reach financial independence so you can retire early, like, the big ticket items are really your lifestyle and, like, cutting out expenses. And whether or not you reach it through inside Super or outside Super is really, it's such a minute detail in my opinion. And you're going to get there either way. You're going to get there as long as you keep plugging away at it. But crunch the numbers yourself, figure out what's the best option for you and stay the course.
I almost think liken this to Pareto's law, or essentially the law of diminishing returns. Really, just focus on those big ticket items that are going to give you the most benefit. And you can almost just cut away those minute details, which, you know, you can spend a disproportionate amount of time debating whether a lick is better than an ETF.
But yeah, exactly.
Both pretty bloody good. So
yeah, try not to lose, like anyone out there listening, try not to lose sleep over it. If whichever way you're going to go, you can always like you can correct the course of the ship later, and it's not going to disastrously affect you. Hope that's a word. So yeah, I think sticking to the big ticket items, like not overextending on the house that you buy, not paying, you know, $1.2 million on a house, not buying expensive cars, like all that stuff. That's really where the important decisions are made. And then all this other stuff we're talking about is really a lot smaller in impact.
Do you have a side hustle? My side hustle is websites, a form of digital real estate. If you want to learn more about this lucrative side hustle, check out my review of the eBusiness Institute and their online self-paced courses. They cover everything from total beginners right through to advanced web design and how to buy, renovate, and sell websites for profit. As a graduate of Matt and Liz's courses, I can't thank them enough for the valuable web skills they gave me, and now I enjoy growing my portfolio of websites for income. Captain Fire listeners can register for free access to some of these courses by signing up using the link at www.captainfire.com/ebusiness-institute-review. Build your portfolio of digital real estate and start using websites to make money today.
So for anyone who's wanting to, I guess, delve a little bit deeper into super, I'll link to Aussie Firebug's Monster Super podcast. It's definitely worth a listen. Clearly, you are passionate about finance and you have a real knack for this kind of stuff. What led into the creation of the blog, and specifically, why are you so interested in helping other people now?
Yeah, so a major reason for me starting the blog, there's a few major reasons, but I was obsessed with the Mad Scientist. Like, he was always my guy in the fire scene. Like, Mr. Money Moustache was awesome, but I feel like Mad Scientist was a bit younger, and I related to his stuff a little bit more. And I loved, he wrote something when he started the podcast, or maybe it was when he started the blog, about how he knew he should research some topics, but without sort of some pressure or some sort of pressure for him to force him to actually research the topics and crunch the numbers and really do the work to fully understand it himself, he might not have done it. So I was like, you know, there's no fire specific website in Australia that I could find at that time in 2015. And I'm going to create one because there's no community or there's no real, fire like scene in Australia, but mostly to keep me accountable. Like, I thought that was a really great tip that I'd read from the Mad Scientist. If you actually make a website, or you make a YouTube channel, or you make an Instagram page, it doesn't matter what medium that you're doing it on, or a podcast, if you actually make it and put it out there, you're sort of forced to become or learn about various topics that make up the subject matter that you're speaking about. So I knew that if I created a website, I'd sort of have to be forced to learn about the super system and franking credits and the Australian stock market, stuff that I was already passionate about. But if I'd actually written, created a tailored good piece of Australian content, financial content, it would force me to go down and do the research and put in the hours to actually understand it fully. So that was one. And the other one was that there was no one out there doing like a podcast about fire, and I really wanted to be a voice in Australia. I basically just wanted to copy the Mad Scientist, to be honest, because he was such an impact on my life. And, you know, they say, what's that quote? The best form of something about imitation.
Oh yeah, imitation is the highest form of flattery.
Yeah, exactly. That's the one. Imitation is the highest form of flattery. So, you know, Mad Scientist was just the guy for me, and basically, I just wanted to be the Australian version of him. And then the other reason, and this is probably the best reason, or has turned out to be the best reason, is when I put my stuff out there, my strategies, everything like that, a lot of people critique them. And that, like, I had a lot of people at the start be like, why are you doing this? This sucks. Like, I actually had my car in my net worth at the very start. And they were like, that's not Nat, sir. You know, get that out of your net worth. I was like, yeah, in hindsight, what was I thinking? But I've learned so much through the comments of the website. I probably learned more through the comments and like the discussions that have happened than I have through some books that I've read, like by some experts. Crazy. And it's because it's Australian specific. And that is what I was lacking. Like when I was reading and consuming all these blogs from overseas, it didn't mean anything to me. A lot of these 401ks and Roth IRAs and everything, they weren't relevant to me. So I love that there's a thriving FIRE community now, and I'm not the only one. There's heaps of really good content creators out there, and I learned so much, and I'm glad to be part of the movement, the FIRE movement in Australia.
Yeah, I totally understand the motivations to be blogging. And you have a lot of really great stuff. Sometimes people can be pretty brutal in the comments. Like I think I've been smacked down a number of times, but you know, it's great. You learn from it and you just got to take it all on stride, I guess.
Yeah. It's a bit scary when you put your shit out there for the first time, like it is scary. And like, you know what I'm talking about because you've published stuff, but some people will never know. Like, even though I am anonymous, it's still, there's a vulnerability of publishing your thoughts and opinions and your content that you spent hours creating and then you put it out there. It's a bit scary, but once you get over it and then you get the odd negative comment, but then as soon as you got your first one, it's just water off a duck's back after that. And it's been one of the best things I've ever done.
Yeah, well, we do have a bit of a culture of tall poppy syndrome in Australia. And for anyone who is listening and doesn't understand that, imagine you've got a bunch of flowers or poppies and one sort of grows bigger than the other. To keep them all even, of course, someone comes along with a big pair of scissors and lops the head off of the tall one.
Agreed.
So has there been any fantastic books that you've read on investing, personal finance, or self-development in general?
I've read a few great ones actually, but my top three, off the top of my head, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, that changed my life, that book. It was instrumental. It's such a cliche answer, but it really is. Like, it's popular for a reason for sure. If you're into real estate, any book that Stephen McKnight has written is fantastic. He's the real deal. Trust me, I've been to his seminars. I've been to many seminars of a lot of different property investors back early when I was a lot younger. And there's a shitload of spruikers, property spruikers out there. Stephen McKnight is not one of those. He's walked the walk, and any property book I don't read his stuff anymore because I'm not that investor that I used to be. I don't want to put in the hours to be an active property investor. But if you're some young budding like builder or sparky that's got all the time in the world that wants to put in the hours and flip a property or do something like that, I would recommend his books. And then the last one, The Boglehead's Guide to Investing, is a great book. That for a passive income and learning about why passive investing makes sense from a strategic point of view, and explaining it a billion times better than I ever could, especially, you know, just speaking to you now, we couldn't cover all the points that are in that book. Go read that book. It's written by the guy that founded Vanguard, which is the holy grail, basically in the whole world of passive investing. And it's a great book. It covers so many things all the way from the start, from like how important an emergency fund is and then all the way to the end about how to actually generate your passive income using ETFs and using that passive style of investing.
Those are three fantastic books. I've lost track of how many copies of Rich Dad, Poor Dad I've actually bought to give to loved ones and friends, because you're so right. It's so important in developing that mindset and that burning desire. All right, so last question. What are your top three tips for someone wanting to reach financial independence?
Number one, without a shadow of a doubt, and I've said this many times throughout interviews, track your spending. So you'll never know. It's imperative. If you want to reach FIRE, you have to track your spending, because without tracking your spending, you don't know how much you need to generate in passive income to cover your expenses. That's one. And two, I guarantee you, you don't even have to budget at all. I promise you don't have to budget, but if you simply track your spending and just do it once a week, track every dollar that leaves your account and write it down, or there's software available that does it for you. I promise that you'll save money, because you will look at stuff, you're like, why are we paying for that still? I thought we canceled that gym membership. Or, you know, why are we spending so much money on drinks or whatever it is? I promise that if you track your spending and you get the complete financial picture of where your dollars are going, you'll start to plug the holes in your boat where it's leaking water. Guarantee you you'll do that. That's the number one, most important one. The second one, I would say, and this is off, Rich Dad, Poor Dad. This is a line out of his book, but pay yourself first. And it's a bit of a cliche answer, but it's so true. And what does that actually mean, pay yourself first? Pay yourself first refers to setting a goal, and I'll use myself as an example. So when I first started, before Mrs. Firebug, we joined Financial Forces, I think my goal back when I was around 24 or 25, I think it was to save $2,000 a month. So no matter what I did, no matter what, I had to save $2,000 out of my pay. Like, I got paid twice in the month, but I had to pay myself first. So every single paycheck I got, $1,000 went into the savings account, no questions asked. And I just had to make it work. It didn't matter if I had a really big expense, if I had to buy new tires on the car that month. Like, if I didn't plan properly and it meant that I was eating baked beans on toast for the whole week, then I had to do it. I always paid myself first. I put my savings and investings at the forefront, and then everything else come after that. So that's what I mean by pay yourself first. And the last one is a really easy one, and I touched on it a little bit earlier, but that's just to learn how to cook. Learn how to cook your own meals. It's one of the easiest expenses to cut down. And it's one of the easiest ones to blow out if you don't know how to cook. If you're always ordering Uber Eats and you're doing takeaway, like, you know, more often than not, you're going to blow through your budget, and it's not as good for you. I promise. Like, if you learn how to actually make your own meals, it's so much better for you. It costs less. You learn a new skill. It's like a triple win. So learn how to cook. Go on YouTube. You got no excuse with the internet these days. Find a recipe. Put the time and effort in, and I promise that once you learn how to cook, there's no going back.
Fantastic. Well, great advice from the Aussie Firebug. Thanks so much for coming on the show.
It's been an absolute pleasure to come on the show, mate. Really looking forward to when it's published.
Now, if the listeners want to find you and read more about your blog, how can they find you or get in touch with you?
Yeah, so just head over to my website, aussiefirebug.com. I blog about our journey to financial independence, so we can retire early. I post our net worth updates every month, and occasionally I'll write an article about anything that tickles my fancy. And I also run a podcast as well. You can search for me on all major podcasting apps, on Spotify and everything. Just search for Aussie Firebug and you'll find me.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Captain Fi Financial Independence Podcast. To read the transcripts or check out the show notes, head over to www.captainfi.com for all the details. If you have a question for the captain, make sure to get in touch. You might even make it on the airwaves. You can reach me online through the Captain Fi contact form or get in touch through the socials. I'm active on Facebook and Instagram, as well as a number of online finance and investing forums. And finally, remember, the information presented on the show and the links provided are for general information purposes only. They should not be taken as constituting professional financial advice. You should always do your own research when making any financial decisions and make sure it's appropriate for your personal circumstance.